those two for now.
Okay.
Ready? Gary, ready?
Yes.
So we're going to call the Public Safety Subcommittee of Ways and Means to order. And today's the last day of the court budget, and we have two public members here to testify, Mr. Martinez and Mr. Cosgrove, who we all know, but I appreciate you both coming today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Paul Cosgrove, representing Oregon Financial Services Association, and I'll be brief, but wanted to take the opportunity to let you know how the members of my association, who are financial services providers, feel about the Judicial Department's budget. Stepping back to the generalities first, obviously members of this subcommittee know, and we just want you to know that my members also know how important a fully functioning court system is in this state. It's sometimes the silent or quiet branch of government that people don't find out about or see unless they've got problems, but when those problems exist, we need a court system that's ready and willing and able to provide the enforcement of our criminal laws and to provide a place for the peaceful resolution of civil disputes. And our members are fully supportive of adequate funding for the Judicial Department to continue to do those functions as they have in the past. So we're just here to support the budget and hope you will be able to find the funds necessary to make some of the restorations necessary to have a fully functioning court system that appropriately works in the community on behalf of businesses and individuals.
Thanks, Paul. Tim?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Tim Martinez here on behalf of the Oregon Bankers Association, the Independent Community Banks of Oregon, and I think I'll go out on a limb and be here on behalf of the United Financial Lobby as well, which includes, in addition to Paul's group, the mortgage brokers, the mortgage bankers, as well as the credit unions. I would just echo what Paul was saying. We're grateful and happy to work with the Chief Justice and his staff in trying to help them get his maintenance level budget. We think it is an appropriate number, is a good level. From the banker side, we have a fairly aggressive identity theft legislative package this time around. We don't think there's a lot of dollars associated with it. Frankly, it's a way to keep people from coming to the state and doing some of these identity theft type crimes. So we're very concerned on this on the criminal side as well, obviously, as the civil side. So we would encourage the subcommittee to adopt the chief's recommended budget.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Anyone else from the public wishing to testify? Otherwise, we'll continue on with the budget presentation. Kingsley, you want to come up?
For the record, Kingsley Cook, State Court Administrator. And Susan's going to just walk you through at a high level the handout of the budget and essential packages that relate to the issues that we've been talking about with the Chief Justice's operating level. And I think as she explains them, they'll become clear why they're part of this presentation.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Susan Klosterman, Deputy State Court Administrator for Business Operations, and we talked, I think, on the first day when we did the overview in very broad and high-level terms what the Chief Justice's recommended budget and have been focusing on the Chief Justice's operating level budget or maintenance level budget over the last few days as we talk about what you do and don't get with the governor's balanced budget and the Chief Justice's operating level budget. I thought we'd give you a little more detail. I know you also have the binders that have all the glorious detail, but in a nutshell, we thought we'd wrap it up in a package here. We've included here the summary of the Chief Justice's recommended budget, which is a format that you've probably seen before because it's a format used by the exec branch agencies. I should also say that we do develop our budget using the statewide budgeting systems that are used by all of state government and use the same definitions, terms, and timing so that you can see it in a presentation that is presented in a way that you've seen before and can easily understand and view. The first page is in the detailed binder, but this is a little bit different in that we've removed all of the indigent defense information, and that's how we have agreed with the Public Defense Services Commission to present the budget. So all of the indigent defense information will be presented with their budget next week. So this top sheet, just in summary, shows on the first page how we arrive at the Chief Justice's operating level budget, and that includes some essential budget packages, and I'll go through those. But then you'll see on the back side of that page, page 2, that there are policy packages, and those policy packages bring us to the total Chief Justice's recommended budget, and we'll also walk through those policy packages and highlight a few of those that we would offer for your consideration. On page 3, we list the Chief Justice's maintenance operating level essential packages, excluding the indigent defense pieces. These are the standard essential packages that are defined in the governor's instructions to the exec branch agencies. So we've used those same categories to define what needs to be in a base or operating level budget. The first package, number 10, are the personal services adjustments that aren't included in the position information control system. I almost said PICS. And those are primarily mass transit tax adjustments. The second package, 020, is adjustments for special session one-time reductions, but also includes, for the most part, changes in the general fund related to jury per diem payments that were a result from a second special session Senate Bill 10,006, and that reduced the amounts that we paid to jurors, so there were some savings there. Package number 030 includes the standard inflation at 3.5% that was used across state government, and also the increased central government service charges. So we have this listed by fund type. I should also mention that we have something here that's new. It's in the other non-limited column, and those are related to an accounting and budgetary practice change that we mentioned a few days ago. In the past, we have recorded the Department of Revenue and Private Collection Agency and credit card fees net of revenue. The accounting change in accordance with the Oregon Accounting Manual is that we record those as expenditures, so we need the budgetary authority to reflect that. So that's what the $5.7 million is. As we move on to page 4, as discussed yesterday in the case of the judicial resources, although we understand that the budgets are tight and you're facing some very difficult decisions, we feel the responsibility to gather the information related to the needs of the courts at this time and include those in policy packages. And a few of those we do want to highlight. The whole list of packages is listed on page 4. But those that we'd like to talk a little bit about today, either because there's something we know we want you to know will not be in the budget and programs that will go away if not funded, or other fund, federal funds, and in some case general fund.
I think we're probably going to want you to go through all the packages.
All the packages?
Yeah. So you just wanted, is now the appropriate time
Certainly.
For you guys to walk through those packages?
Certainly. The first package is a restoration of abolished positions is the title. Those are were actually positions that are included in the Chief Justice's operating level budget. Those positions did exist at the time that budget was developed last spring. But what's happened over the course of the five, maybe six special sessions is House Bill 4055 was passed during second special session and abolished a little over 60 FTE. So this package is asking that those FTE be restored.
This will put you to where you were at the end of the 0103, Miami?
Correct.
Or, I mean, at the end of the 0103 budget session.
Close the session, correct,
yep.
Mr. Chair, and it would be at the Chief Justice's operating level budget then.
Chair, question.
Yes.
Are all those positions filled?
Those positions have been abolished,
okay.
So they're not filled.
But they were all filled at the time that they were abolished.
They were they were vacant and identified as vacant for purposes of budget reductions, because of budget reductions.
And they had been vacant for some period of time?
The first sentence is, in the second special session, $10.3 million was removed from operations, but we didn't have to identify the FTE when those were removed in second special session. In the third special session, leadership asked for LFO to look at statewide vacancies that were being held open because of not having sufficient funds, and these were positions that were vacant, that $6 million of them that related towards that $10 million cut, if that makes sense. But we were so.
This will restore you to what?
Go ahead. Mr. Chair, my greatest concern here is that if these were vacant or had been cleaned out prior to the time that they were declared to be empty and not funded, I guess what I'm looking at and what I'm hearing is, sounds an awful lot like CSL budgeting again. And I just am anxious about that, but won't say anything more at this time.
I'm just trying to figure, so this will give us, if we were to approve policy package number 101, that would take you to what your staffing level was? Or
at the close of the last regular session, Mr. Chair.
But were these new positions that we approved that were vacant, or is some percentage of them?
They happened to be vacant at the point in time when we were working with Legislative Fiscal about reduction planning during the second special session.
Okay. Was Robin handling the budget thing?
Yeah, Robin's been handling the budget since we came here.
This was great. So, Robin, these positions, there wasn't anybody walking around on the breadline after these positions went away?
No, Mr. Chair. The Judicial Department had a number of vacant positions. We went through and identified positions that were being held vacant as a result of Special Session 1, if you
right.
remember,
mm-hmm.
the one-time administrative savings, and we identified positions that were being held vacant because the budget had been cut.
Okay.
And these are the positions that were being held vacant because the funding had been taken away.
Okay.
Just to clarify, that's exactly right. They weren't because they weren't needed. They were being, that was the only way we could achieve that level of $1 million savings, was to, when people left, not fill them. Or, and we did have layoffs the first time around of 38 people. So, but these didn't lay off people. We had laid them off by the time these were taken.
In relationship to when we, before we go to work sessions, I'm interested in seeing what the court's plan would be if we were to approve that budgeting package on the distribution of those staff. Okay.
Mr. Chair, the second package, number 102, is a critical workload staffing package, and that's based on requests submitted by the courts for staffing needs. We would use the National Center study as we looked at and reviewed those critical needs also as those distributions would be made. A few items in the package that should be noted. I think Kingsley mentioned yesterday that we appeared at the November 2003 Emergency Board to get some staff that had set aside in a special purpose appropriation, and those 9 of those 18 positions were approved at that time, and we would ask that they were approved as permanent positions, ask that those continue into the 0305 biennium. Those positions were distributed to Clackamas and Umatilla counties based on the National Center study, the most need. At the same time, the November 03, I guess it was an 02 e-board, wasn't it?
They were distributed to which counties?
Clackamas and Umatilla.
Okay.
At that same emergency board, there were 9 other positions that had been set aside in a special purpose appropriation, and those approval of those was set aside to this 0305 budget review. So we would ask that those be approved and that we would look again at the National Center study for that distribution.
Where are your other funds and federal funds coming from on these packages?
Excuse me?
Other funds and federal funds.
Other funds and federal funds.
In this package?
No, starting with C.
That's package 102.
In package 102, item C on page 5, we have the 10 positions that we referred to when we were talking about collections in Multnomah. Ask that those limited duration positions be made permanent. The funding source is from the monies collected. Same funding source is under D for a statewide collections manager to work with the private collection agencies and the Department of Revenue and the 36 trial courts, the Attorney General, to make changes, improvements, and coordinate the collections program for the court system. There are also other funds, and then primarily federal funds on E, page 6. Those are for drug court coordinators in Benton, Clackamas, Malheur, and Marion counties. Those are grant funds. Other funds, F, on the same page 6, would just make a slight increase, 0.2 FTE, for a citizen review board coordinator. And G is federal funds, establishes a juvenile court improvement coordinator from existing federal funds. So those dollars are available. They just need a position. And H is to increase a less than full-time position in the appellate settlement program to full-time, and that's funded with filing fee revenues.
Other questions, package 102? I just had a question. Why are you putting drug court coordinators in, and then we've got, I guess this is the existing drug courts, and then package 103 is new stuff?
These are grant funds in the critical workload package, and those supplement the augment the general funded family law.
And they cross biennium. The grant fund started in
correct.
This
is a continuation.
All right.
Package 103, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, is the family law drug court. It's really a longer-term plan. It's part of a six-year plan. This would be the next installment. And there are people here who can talk more about the family drug courts, and I think you've heard a bit about those. Those have been a priority not only with the department but had been with the legislature last session. There was a six-year plan that was published and presented to the legislature in 2000, and a lot of those positions right now are vacant or have been abolished. So to continue the program, we would need restoration of those positions, and that's part of the 60 that we talked about in package 101, but then would need the additional positions to complete the rollout of the six-year plan.
And that plan was done in response to legislative requests and statutory direction that we present a plan of how we would put in drug courts and family courts in all the state.
I just like you stay in touch with corrections. I know that part of what corrections is planning on offering as reductions, at least as an option, is to look at the $1,145 and instead of doing so much probationary stuff, is to look at specific. They're going to give us a list of specific crimes to do single sanction for, and not do anything beyond that'll. It'll just be single sanction, no continuing probation, no treatment is one of the things that they're considering offering up. And I just ask you to keep that in mind as we look at the drug court packages and really the viability of the drug court program if we're only going to provide single, if we only are able to provide single sanction as a result of 1145. So,
Judge Collins tomorrow is at that. How to do drug courts on no money.
That's not how to administer them.
But a little
that's
money
not
helps
how to pay
a lot.
For the A&D. That's not how to pay for the A&D treatment.
That's for sure.
If he comes up for a way to pay for the A&D treatment for free, please let us know. We will try and accrue the savings to the court.
I have a bill to provide for the A&D treatment, Mr. Chair.
I'm well aware of that, Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, I just had one question regarding a six-year plan. How far are we into that six-year plan?
This was supposed to be the fifth and sixth year, but we lost some ground last biennium, which was the third. So this was the last trimester of it.
And this is the final roll-up cost?
It is, but it does require restoration of the ones that had been awarded by at the beginning of the biennium but were abolished subsequently in House Bill 4055.
Mr. Chair, just one thing. I've heard so much as we've gone through some other hearings in the last few days about programs dealing with domestic violence and juveniles and domestic relations and those kinds of things. Seems like this is really in vogue. Lots of folks are getting federal funds and other funds and are participating in this, and I don't know of any place I'd rather have it than here, but it seems to crop up in lots of other budgets that people are referring domestic violence cases and counseling on them and those kinds of things. So, and I think this is probably a venue for it.
Got to be able to sanction them if they're going to keep
on
those programs.
Absolutely. Yeah. Depends upon the size of the hammer.
Yep. A lot of times, unfortunately. All right. You want to keep?
Okay, Mr. Chair, package number 104, technical equipment. That's a package that would make some replacements to computer equipment, audio equipment in the courts, and digital recording equipment that is particularly essential now that a lot of the Steno reporters have been.
And that's not in your handout because the handout was just as shaded, so now Susan's going to tell you what page she's referring to. From that master list on page 4.
Page 259, you'll find the details on package 104 if you want to read further on that. Package 105.
Are you, just as a question, in package 101, I know that several stenographic reporters were eliminated in the state, I believe. Are plans to rehire stenographic reporters or not? I know they're a higher level FTE. Typically, how's the court dealing with those? We're approving FTE, but we're also approving position FTE. Is the court planning on hiring back stenographic reporters, or are we moving the technology piece?
I think, Mr. Chair, that would vary from court to court and based on their experiences now that some of them have lived without stenos and we as a... Pardon?
Go ahead.
Well, but I think we need to know for granting position authority and for budgeting purposes if you're going to hire a COS-2 versus hiring a stenographic, versus hiring someone who's a stenographer, the position authority and budget and money that goes along with that is substantially more money. So,
and Representative Patridge, you had asked us to prepare where those would go, and that would involve that issue. A number of the courts that have let those positions go are hoping to convert them using that level of permanent financing to convert them to clerical staff, support staff.
Well, that's my question, though, is in package 101, are the restorations and the restoration number at the stenographic level, or are they at the revised position at the COS-2 or clerical levels that they would be replaced by?
Right now, the positions are the total permanent financing in dollars relate to the positions that were abolished. So you can reconstitute them differently for the same amount of money. You can have more FTE, or you can take them and then break them out afterwards. So,
or we could have some savings if we were to restore the package.
Right, that's true. That too.
Mr. Chair,
so that's what I mean. When you give us that, we're going to need to know what you're going to do there. I don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
We have about a $200 million hole to fill. $30 million hole between governor's recommended budget and your budget. People are going to fall off the back end if we're able to restore you to some degree because there's just not the money. And so anything we can do to keep those things together, I would certainly appreciate. That's why I'm asking the question.
Mr. Chair, given concerns about the quality of the court record, there has been a lot of discussion, as you can imagine, about where there is a real need for stenos as a live person and where digital recording equipment can take their place. So that
is
being looked at.
Yeah, and I don't believe that digital recording equipment can fully replace stenos probably everywhere. There's appropriate places for stenos and appropriate and inappropriate places for stenos sometimes. And so that's why I'm at, that's why I raised the issue.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bowen.
And I appreciate the fact that you're talking about that that technology portion of that, because I think, isn't there, relative to translations and interpretations, isn't there software that's coming onto the market that does a great deal of that, that does some translating at present, automatic translating as you're stenoing in and those kinds of things. I don't think it's, I think it's far from perfect, but I think it probably is moving along very rapidly. I've seen some of it demonstrated in some of the council state government shows where data is entered in and instantaneously translated. So I just wondered if we're moving in any of that direction with the technology, and I realize technology is coming up in just a couple of minutes.
Do you want to save that till later, or?
Well, maybe when we talk about the staff and interpreters.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chair, you'd mentioned under 103 something about the Department of Corrections offering up their portion. Is that part of the family and drug court?
No, what I was referring to is the fact that they're thinking about just doing a single when they have the people in the drug courts, they'll like order into A and D treatment, and they'll keep them on the line with a hammer and continue to have repeated hearings to see how they're doing. What Department of Corrections is looking at as one of their savings options is not paying for the probation through $1,145 and just giving them like 80 hours community service, and that's it. You're done with your probation.
So
then they don't have to pay.
Move them out of 1145 entirely.
No, they would be under 1145, but at a reduced cost because you wouldn't continue to keep them on probation. So it would be, you get one slap on the wrist and you're gone, rather than the drug court keeping them in A&D treatment and continuing to monitor them as
that's
for an intensive period of time.
That's in the drug court portion of it, then.
Well, so what I'm saying is if we take away the drug, if we choose drugs as single sanction, that it doesn't make much sense to have a drug court, because that's how drug courts work, is to continue to keep them in line and keep them in treatments and things. And if we just say, well, you got 8 hours community service even though you had...
But they'd still be 1145. They'd still be 1145 prisoners during that time.
They'd be under 1145 until they completed their single sanction. After they completed their single sanction, typically we'll keep them on probation for a period of 18 months, or in this case of drug court, really under intense scrutiny by the court. So corrections wants to
tell us time they're successfully completed the program.
But now, if we give them 80 hours community service, no drug treatment, none of that, it doesn't make sense to have a drug court, really, if we don't have appropriate sanctions to deal with that.
Okay.
All right.
Mr. Chair, Package 105, which you'll find on page 309 in the budget binder, is...
The big binder?
In the big binder. Furniture and equipment needs that submitted by the courts and listed there by court are a variety of courtroom needs and office equipment needs. Package 106, Mr. Chair, is a list of three courts in this upcoming biennium that have some new or remodeled facilities available in their courthouse. As you may know, the courthouse facility is responsibility to be provided by the county. The actual furnishing of the courthouse is a responsibility of the state. So Jackson, Marion, and Multnomah counties have some space available to them and have the need to furnish that space. And on page 311 in the budget binder, you'll find a better description of that.
Okay.
Package number 107 would provide a 2% annual increase to the Judicial Department employees, cost of living increase, and health benefits. Package number 201, oddly enough, is actually in the blue handout. We're back to the handout now.
Okay, you're making us work.
Me too, Mr. Chair. Package number 201 is...
Why don't we skip 201 until Representative Butler joins us?
Oh, okay.
Let's skip past that.
Certainly.
202? Sounds like a good number.
Okay. 202, Mr. Chair, is what we call the Juror Access Improvement Account, and this was an account that was established actually in the 1999 legislative session, and the law was changed related to jury payments, and it would allow the jurors to waive their payment. The monies go into this account, and for the intended purpose, we're currently writing policies around the use of the funds, but it would be to improve access and accommodations and communications for the jurors.
How much money is in this account?
Our estimate is, it's right now, it took a little while to pick up speed, but it's bringing in between $8,000 and $10,000 a month, so...
What's the current account balance?
I'll have to check. It's probably, I'll have to check, Mr. Chair, see what it is today.
Okay.
Package number 301 is a placeholder for new judgeships. At the time we put the budget together, we didn't have the results of the Gleaves Commission report and recommendations, which were reported yesterday. So this package would provide for new judgeships, and we would base that request, revise it based on the Gleaves Commission report. Package number 302.
That has to do, the next four are actually described all in the overview package, the goldenrod one from the first day, because we had a report on policy-related packages going with legislation that was either introduced by the Judicial Department or in coordination with the Judicial Department, and they're four of those. The first one was a judicial retirement. These are ones that were all drafted last May by Legislative Council. It was there to enhance the Plan B in order to encourage more judges into the service at an earlier age than they might when they're first eligible because of the disconnect between being able to pick up Medicare. So it increases an accrual rate so that it corresponds with judge terms, and it also allows for the department, it removes the sunset on the provision that allowed for the department last session to provide for health coverage for judges who retired and were serving Plan B but had not yet reached Medicare age and that subsidy. So this part of the legislation removes the sunset on it, so it would now be a permanent feature. We had a reservation to the e-board for funding of it, and because of the downturn in the nature, did come and report with a budget note on the retirement plan, but did not receive the funding to implement it last session, and it goes away in 2004. So those are those. That was really 302 and 303 together. 304 is a juror per diem change. This was a commitment when everybody, I think, first session hoped that the downturn in the economy was more transitory. So after the jurors' rates were decreased, their daily rates and their mileage rates were decreased, and then we had hoped this biennium that if the economy had returned more robustly, that we would be able to restore them to their former levels. So this legislation and this policy package did that. As we said, we don't feel that this is, once again, probably yet the time to try and add that back in, but it is an important economic issue for jurors' ability to serve is their per diem and their expenses. The stalking legislative change is that bill's been up in judiciary, and that fiscal is changing. I don't think a tremendous amount. Last session, there was a bill to bring stalking out of the sheriffs and law enforcement side and bring them into the courts like FAPAs, and so that created a whole new kind of filing caseload for the courts. And we agreed with the chair of the judiciary to set up a work group on it during the interim so we could also conform a lot of the processes so we didn't have different stalking process, FAPA, protective order, restraining order, and the idea was to make a more efficient process. But the fact that it does bring a whole new caseload at the front end into the court did contain a fiscal on it. But we, Chief Justice, had made a commitment that he would put in his budget a placeholder with the funding for that should the policy decision be made that was the better way to handle these types of cases. So I believe that bill is still up in House Judiciary at this time. So, and then
The last package, number 401, Mr. Chair, is although we've presented the Chief Justice's recommended budget without the indigent defense information, and you'll see that next week with the Public Defense Services Commission. In fact, current law is that the transfer would take place October 1st. There is a bill that passed out of House Judiciary this week, House Bill 2873, that would move that transfer date to July 1st. This package just moves the dollars from the Judicial Department to the Public Defense Services Commission July 1, should that bill pass.
Let's go back to the staff interpreters piece on 201, interpreter and butler. I was hoping he would join us before then. So let's wait. Hopefully Tom will return. Are you at a stopping point now with your stuff? Any other questions about the packages? Okay. I know Julie Brandis is here from AOI. So we'll just bring Julie up real quick, and then I think we're going to go, and then Kingsley, are we going to Carl, and then?
I'll answer questions.
All right. Thanks, Julie.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Julie Brandis, representing Associated Oregon Industries and its retail council. And for the first time, probably my history with Associated Oregon Industries, and I am the old dog there, we are looking very closely at the budget, the court's budget this session, primarily because our members are very concerned about what happens when courts go to 4 days a week and when criminals aren't prosecuted, for example, shoplifters. We represent the nation's 10 largest retailers. And they shoplifting has really changed, and we'll talk about that in a policy debate this session, but it is now our biggest concern is boosting professional shoplifting. And the Senate actually voted on a bill today regarding this where large amounts of product are stolen at one time. And then and they're generally associated with drug rings, and they operate in large teams in almost a regional fashion. And what we have done in other states, and including in Oregon, is generally we do the investigation. The retail community does the investigation. They hire the private investigator to follow these rings. Then when there's a time to make the arrest and such, they can turn that information over to law enforcement, and law enforcement can then take into account, can make the arrest, and then we turn it over to the courts. And if we can't go after professional shoplifting and if we can't prosecute these crimes, again, it's a very big concern to the retail community. On the broader aspect, as it relates to the broader business community, we've heard a lot about stability this session for a variety of issues. You hear about education funding stability. But really, businesses also look for stability in our courts. When you look to finding reasons why a community or a state is business friendly, having that stability to make sure that your litigation is going to be resolved and resolved quickly is very important. So we have specific examples as it relates to retail community. On the other hand, we have the broader picture, and that is important to have a stable court system, just as it's important to have a stable education system.
Questions for Julie?
Mm-hmm.
Carl, you ready? You do?
Or no, you have to sit here because she gives you the question.
And I'm here for moral support.
Representative Patridge, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Carl Ward. I'm the Chief Information Officer for the Judicial Department. I actually have some answers to a series of questions that you asked, I think, Mr. Chair. And then yesterday, Representative Butler was asking a lot of questions about what we had done over the last decade and what our efficiencies were, and so I put together some stuff to try to respond to that. And I was thinking about sort of turning around the order since he's out of the room, but I think it all just it sort of fits together better the way I've got it. So I'm just going to sort of go ahead there in the order I had it. And I have a couple of handouts that I think you have, and I sort of threw these together at the last minute. I'm sorry, they don't have page numbers, and they're separately page numbered. I'll try to point you to the handout that I'm talking about as I go through here. Well, let me start off with digital audio recording. Representative Butler was asking about digital audio recording. There's really sort of a couple of things. Digital transcription, which is I say something in English and the computer writes it in English, and then there's translation, which is I say it in English and it writes it in French or something like that. We keep an eye on those things all the time. We go to the same conferences, and a lot of the people in the trial courts also keep a close eye on that kind of technology because it does have a lot of promise. But that electronic transcription and translation stuff is really not ready for prime time in the sense of actually doing a record for the court. It's fairly accurate, but it's just fairly accurate, and that's just really not good enough yet. But we do keep an eye on that stuff, and as it comes along, we do implement it. A lot of the courts, I don't have the list with me, but the list is fairly extensive, have gone to digital audio recording over the last 5 or 6 years from analog recording. It's improved the quality of the record. It's improved the ability to back up and find the record years later when you need a transcription of a case. In many cases, it's allowed the court reporter and the courtroom clerk to be combined into one person, and so the courts have gained efficiencies in that way. So the courts and the technology division are always sort of looking for those new technologies as they come along.
Carl, I know that the court has done some very, very innovative things in regard to being efficient. I'd be interested, but part of the issue in dealing with the independent streak that we have in the judicial system from circuit to circuit is whether the investment made by the court really gets implemented at the local level. I know that we try and use the carrot and coerce and be nice about it sometimes, but at the same time we have to look at, you know, especially in tight budget environments where we're going. I'd be interested in having the jurisdictions listed as well as the technological improvements and maybe you know, in some kind of table so we can look at whether it's been fully implemented there, whether it's been partially implemented there, or if there's a cost associated with implementing it, potentially. But I'm interested in knowing what jurisdictions haven't implemented stuff that's available to them that provides an efficiency and cost savings to the court overall, because I know it is diverse and wide from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. And so if you would could provide something like that, or I'm happy to help you work on populating a table that will suit my needs, and maybe we can send that to the judges afterwards. Let them know that we are continuing to look at, that the committee is looking at that as well as we review the entire judicial budget.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think I brought that with me today. So
okay.
I'm going to talk about that in just a minute. May All not
right.
be quite as detailed as you want, but we could certainly go there.
Good.
And to that point, Mr. Chair, the Representative Butler was asking what we had done in the 90s. And I actually had to put my head together with some other people who had been around through the 90s to actually remember what we'd done. But the first...
I was still in law school in the 90s. So.
The first page of this handout packet is just a list of the major, really mostly applications that... improved efficiency in the trial courts through the 90s. They're more or less in chronological order, and Representative Butler was asking where the numbers are on efficiencies, and I really don't have the numbers, but I was trying to sort of think of a good way to respond to that that would sort of be meaningful, because we really have wrung a lot of efficiencies out of the trial courts with automation over the last decade. One of the things that you could look at that's a number, certainly as I think Judge Collins was talking about yesterday, is time to trial. That's a statistic that's always looked at nationally, and it's looked at from court to court, and has been an important statistic for the trial courts, and it's an important statistic for the business partners of the trial courts when it's not good. And so if you look at our time to trial statistics over the last decade, you'll see that from year to year, they're good or better, and you'll see that nationally our time to trial statistics are very good. That can only happen if the court is well run and efficient, and part of the reason that we've been able to do that, a big part of the reason we've been able to do that, is through the application of technology, good case management system, good calendaring system. And so that's one number. Another sort of number that fits for all of the courts that you could look at over the period of the 90s are collection rates. And if you went back to about 1990 or so, the courts were just getting a financial system, and so collections really started for the most part in the trial courts as an active effort from 91, 92 on. And I think if you go back and look at those collection rates, they've improved over the years. And at the same time, if you went back and looked at the distribution of clerical staff in the trial courts, you would see that they do that with really less and less accounting staff due to the automation that we brought to bear. Now, they take those staff out and put them to other uses in the trial courts, but still, you can't improve your collections without good automation. You can't improve your collections over time like that without some effort on the court's part. So those are just sort of big granular numbers. I'm not going to read down this list, but I'll just mention a couple of other things on this list that were sort of big through the 90s. I'd also say that until you get down to the maybe the last two or three items on this list, all of the courts, for the most part, have all of this stuff implemented. Now, they may not all be at the same level of utilization or sophistication, but they all have this stuff implemented and are doing a good job of using it. Somewhere sort of early in the 90s, Rule 7 timely disposition functionality was built into our case management system, and that was just a set of business process rules that let the trial courts know when the next action in a case needed to take place. You know, it's just you put the information into the database, and eventually it reminds you when you should be doing something for timely disposition. That gives you just an across-the-board efficiency when things are getting taken care of like that by the system. Disposition reporting. We used to, in the old non-automated days, get a fingerprint control card with the, or a copy of the fingerprint control card from the booking officer, from the district attorney, and when the case was done, we had to have that thing filed, and when the case was done, a clerk had to be able to remember to pull that out of the case file and fill out the disposition on it and send it over to LED so that they could build a criminal history. Well, in 93 or 94 or somewhere in there, we automated that transfer from the between the courts and LEDs, and that piece of work for the trial court really just went away. A fairly sizable piece of trial court reporting on every single felony disposition. And in addition to that, at the time, I think our reporting statistics were about 15 or 20%. And now we run in the high 80s for automated disposition reporting. We actually run higher with cleanup. Another thing that came along in sort of the second half of the 90s was juvenile OGIN. Through the 90s, the emphasis in the trial courts and sort of the rest of the state turned to juvenile as a place to take on crime early on if you got involved in a juvenile's life early on. At the same time, we realized we really didn't have a case management system that handled juveniles, so we put a fairly large investment in developing a juvenile version of OGIN. The other things that happened down at the bottom of the page in the 90s were the entire technology world changed. The internet came along. More recently, last biennium, I believe, we worked with the Department of Corrections to set up a video post-conviction relief hearings. As Kingsley, I think, was mentioning yesterday, we do those out of the Supreme Court, out of the Justice Building, to Snake River. It seems like there's three legs on that thing, but I can't remember where the third one is. The Attorney General comes upstairs, and we have senior judges, and I guess senior and pro tem are the same thing. We have senior judges come in and hear those cases. Certainly saves a lot of, judge and district attorney travel time. Representative Butler was also sort of mentioning the law office model of what makes a modern and efficient law office, and I was sort of thinking through the different things that I think of when I think of a well-run law office, and really item for item, I think the courts over the 90s and today really match probably most well-run law offices for the penetration of the use of technology into our operation. We use modern office automation. We have electronic legal research available to everyone. We've got our case management systems, our financial management systems, and we've got electronic forms and sort of the whole nine yards in that sort of modern electronic office environment. So I do think that we're actually doing a pretty good job and have done a pretty good job over the last decade.
I'm interested in seeing from the IT piece of the court also kind of a list of the functional things that, Kingsley and you would work together, I think, on this to come up with what the function, with what the main kind of input functions are, what are the staff intensive thing, items that the court, whether it be, entry, whether it be entry of indictments or those types of things, in a kind of prioritized list, what are the most staff-intensive things that that are computer-intensive as well? Kind of what you use the computers most for in the court, what the staff uses the computers most for in the court, if that makes some sense.
Chair Patridge, members of the committee, we can certainly get back to you with that. I see that I'm taking a note here.
And maybe if you can also, just so the members, I understand as a lawyer how some of those things work, but for the benefit of other committee members, should they choose to use this as a tool as well in trying to evaluate where you're at with your technology, also kind of numerically how they are in the process as you process a file. So we're interested in seeing where those particular pieces break down, if that, not necessarily break down, but where those pieces mesh together.
We can do that.
Okay.
Doug, if there's anything you want to hear about today, we can probably talk about some things just in their court from them implementing over the last decade. But
I think I'm pretty familiar with most of the court technology stuff, but other members of the committee may not be.
More than you want to do.
I will. I have one sort of anecdotal efficiency comment here on the uniform criminal judgment that we talked about the other day as one of the more recent pieces of technology that we've been implementing in the trial courts. And my business analysts who have been out in the trial courts and installing the system about a year ago started collecting up some comments from the courts as they came on this. And so I'm just going to read this short paragraph of it's really sort of a paraphrase of what several different courts have said. And Doug even said part of it, so he can shake his head yes or no if it's right or wrong. In addition to major systemic benefits, meaning that we just did a lot of maintenance upgrades as we did this, courts report numerous reengineering benefits due to modern technology and design. For example, less preparation work on judgment documents prior to the court. This thing produces the judgment automatically from date entry in the courtroom. Elimination of the need to verify judgment accounting accuracy. Electronic transfer of the district attorney in the jail. Improved accuracy. Better balancing of hearings resulting from fewer delays, fewer resets, and less court downtime. Elimination of redundant manual calendars. Less calendar copies. 240 pages three times a week in Multnomah County. And Internet publishing. Less calendar copies and Internet publishing of calendars. Issuing FTA warrants is much faster than before. And training new employees is twice as fast after the implementation of GUI OGIN. And then on improved accuracy, I think what you may hear in weeks to come from the Attorney General and from the Department of Correction and what they have been telling us is that let me see if I can say how this works. Department of Corrections has a business unit that is the sentence calculation unit or something like that. They figure out how long, based on the judgment, you're going to spend in jail and what programs you're supposed to go to. When they get a judgment that they can't understand, they send it to the Attorney General's office, and they've got some section there, and one of the things that section does is they help the Department of Corrections figure out what this judgment meant and how to implement it within Department of Corrections. And if they can't figure it out, they are the ones that talk to the judge and sort of reconcile it. The Attorney General's office is saying that they find no errors with these judgments, whereas they have a fairly high error rate on the manually prepared judgment. So we continue to sort of up the ante on efficiency.
Write that down, Rob. We can find savings in DOJ.
Right.
We're prepping them now.
All right. They came before you guys. That was all right.
And in addition, and I'm not going to talk about it, about the next five or six pages of this handout were the list of projects with statuses and benefits for things that we have been implementing in this biennium 0103. And now some of the statuses have moved to on hold as sort of events have overtaken us. And then another section in there is tentatively where we plan to go with the strategic plan for the 0305 biennium. Once again, we may be revisiting some of this to look for shorter-term, easier-to-come-by efficiencies in trial courts as budgets go down. But
this was our plan. Your technology plan, is it prioritized?
It's not prioritized on this list, but it is prioritized, Chair Patridge, members of the committee.
Can you give us a prioritized list?
You bet.
With associated costs?
You bet.
Okay.
Let's see. Then the next thing was asked for was a budget summary table. And about midway through the packet, there's a page-size table. And that just shows sort of the major IT budget items and has the 9901 budget, our original 0103 budget, our fifth special session 0103 budget, which is really the budget we're operating under, the chief's budget and the governor's budget. And I think the idea here is to sort of put our budget in context historically, and maybe a better way to actually see that is if you look one page past that, there's a large graph. And I actually used to use this prior to the 99-01 session when I was trying to convince people that it was time to invest more money in the OJDIT budget. And what that actually shows is the technology budget for the Judicial Department actually since 89-91. And actually for most of the 90s, and even while we were continuing to roll out new technology, develop new applications, and improve our efficiencies, our staffing level in IT was flat, and our budget actually shrunk over that decade. We took a big jump, very much thanks to the legislature funding us, in 99-01 in increased staffing. And again, since then, this special session budget, of course, we've taken some cuts, as has everyone, and the governor's recommended budget is slightly higher, if I have my numbers correct, and I think they're at least in the neighborhood. The governor's recommended budget is slightly higher than this special session budget. The two X's above those are where the Chief Justice's budget would have been. Unfortunately, we've had sort of a flat decade there, and it looks like we're headed off into another flat decade. That's no fault of yours or mine.
And just in context with what Carl's saying as a clarification on the governor's budget, the governor has a number, and Carl is using what the pro rata share would be. We say across the board cut to judicial non-judge amounts would be approximately 14.3%. So Carl, take your budget from beginning of session this time, what have been the old CSL, and take a 14.3% cut to it and say what that number is and what you can do for it. So that's where it stands and where that number came from.
Okay, that's a little budget picture.
Carl, I would like to get some other numbers from you. I'd like to get your cost per node, cost per users, so we can have
Mr.
that
Chair,
cost per workstation.
My next topic.
All right. It's in here?
It's actually the...
I tried to read ahead a little bit.
It's actually there's a separate one-page handout.
Right.
Now, let me qualify this a little bit. I actually sort of figured out, Kingsley had actually asked me for this a couple of days ago, and it took me a couple of days to remember and figure out what she was asking me for. This page is actually pulled out of my 01-03 budget presentation, and the numbers are the same. And so I'm just going to describe this to you. I could update these numbers. I think if I updated these numbers to the current Gartner Group study and our current staffing levels, the ratios wouldn't change much, but I'll be glad to do that for you. But let me just point out a couple of things here that I think also sort of helps put the IT staff and the size of the IT staff within our agency in context. This is based on an October 2000 analysis report from Gartner Group, which is the state of Oregon's sort of IT advisory group. We contract for their services under a state contract. They surveyed 510 enterprises. These were government enterprises with an average revenue of $1.6 billion and average employee size of 6,200 employees. A little bit bigger than the Judicial Department. Major findings included, skipping down to the second bullet, IT spending as a percentage of revenue, Gartner found that the average for state agencies was 8.55%. For OJD, that means that compared to the average, for the 01-03 budget, we were spending 41 cents on the dollar compared to the average. Part of that might be if you look at an agency with 6,200 employees, we're smaller, so that makes some sense. Nevertheless, we're spending less than half of the average for a survey of quite a few government agencies. So I think IT is also efficient in the Judicial Department. Next bullet, IT budget per employee. State agencies spend $23,339 per user. OJD spends about 7,000, that number's probably a little high, or about 30 cents for every dollar. State agencies spend $146,000 per IT employee. OJD spends $70,000 per OJD employee. Once again, sort of passes a smell test, about 48 cents on the dollar for what the average is. Just another way to look at sort of the relative size of the IT operation within the agency. And then the last bullet I'll talk about, the next one, is percentage of employees that are IT workforce. Gardner Group found the average percentage to be 9.7%. That's percentage of IT employees in the workforce. For OJD, it's 5.3%, or, once again, 0.54 FTE for every one FTE on average, about half. Then the other thing that I did, and once again, this is a little dated, is I took a look at state of Oregon agencies. And for the state of Oregon agencies that had more than 800 employees, and there are about 12 or 13 of them at the time, we fell roughly in the middle in terms of a ratio of IT staff to overall staff. So even though we got a sort of big increase in 9901, and I'm, you know, always a little paranoid about somebody saying, oh, we're going to take that back because it's recent, and, you know, they haven't really had their jobs long enough. We're really about middling in terms of staffing to agency staff. So that's my pitch for staff. Is that, Chair Partridge, the numbers you were looking for? And I'd be glad to update this. There is actually a new Gartner study on this that I have. I just haven't really looked at it.
I'm just interested in kind of more your raw ratio. You can give me compared to Gardner, but I take Gardner with a grain of salt, so they're usually very high in my estimation.
Well,
compared to what other others run. That's my opinion. But.
So if we're running less than half of what they say, we're looking pretty good. So.
I'm not committing to anything at this particular point in time.
Mr. Chair, just a quick question.
Yes, Robin.
Are these ratios based on all staff that are doing IT or related work, or just the central office staff? I'm thinking about support staff that may be out in the trial courts.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Robin, that's a good question.
No, they're all up in, where are they? Columbia County.
These are our central staff ratios, and at the time that I did these, we had, I think the number I used was 54 and 10, so 64 staff overall. I don't actually have that many now, but I did at the time I was doing these numbers. We have, when we were fully staffed, we had about 30 or 35 technical support specialists that were in the various trial courts. Most of the trial courts had one, except for the very small ones, and then Multnomah County had six or seven. They've got 300 people up there, so there's a certain amount of.
We got those in 99 too, as part of that package
as well.
To get them out.
And if you add those numbers in there, it does change the sum. It still doesn't really put us over the top compared to the agencies. It moves us up some compared to other state agencies, but actually what I believe is that the numbers I was looking at for other state agencies was also their central staff, and I also believe, as I understood the Gartner Group study, they were really looking at centrally funded IT staff. They point out in their study that you can look at some agencies, and if you ask who's an IT staff person, it includes almost the whole agency, so it starts to not make sense when you sort of go out from the stuff that's really in the IT budget.
I have an opportunity for full disclosure, because we're going to ask you what your staffing looks like per court.
Hey, my life is public record.
Chair Patrick, if I just might add to just, I know you know this, but some of the other committee members may not, that there's the OJD users, the employees and the judges, and that's about 2,000 users because there's various stations. But we have a whole group of outside users, which is more than the OJD staff, another 2,500.
We looked at that. I think we looked at that in the IT, and that's we looked at that in the IT committee last time.
Right. So just
we need
for
to look
context.
At those. I'm just trying to keep us consistent.
Let's see. IT staff is spending the budget. There was a question asked about the sort of phase in and layoff of staff. And so there is a table about two pages back from where you are that looks like this. It is titled Oregon Judicial Department Technology Plan Staff Phase In. And the left hand column is about the organizational structure of the IT shop, and under help desk, for example, I've listed a few of the sort of major business processes that the help desk performs. So if you just sort of look down that column, you can sort of see what my organizational structure is. And then across the page, I listed out, divided into PF for permanent finance and LD for limited duration, because I had, at one time I had 10 limited duration staff. I'm down to 6, I think, now. And then V for vacancy. And so I just showed sort of when I hired those different people. And if you look at the very bottom column, you can just sort of see the total of not vacant. And you can see I sort of, based on 99 funding and then continuation funding in 01-03, we sort of ramped up through right up till the end of 2001 and actually in a little bit into the first quarter of 2002. And then at that time, I don't know which special session we were in, but at that time vacancies started being frozen. And so as people walked out the door at that time, that was the end of those positions, or at least the end of my ability to fill those positions. And so we started to work our way back down the other side of being fully staffed up. That's a picture of that. The other thing that I sort of thought I heard in the question about FTE and what do you do with them, in addition to just sort of how you're organized and when you got there, there's a picture on the next page or a chart that's titled on the second line, Resource Allocation Summary by FTE. And what we do is we have a project management timekeeping system, and so everybody in IT sort of records their time, and we charge it to projects or processes. And so down the left-hand side of that page is a slightly longer list of things that we do in the IT shop, and then across the top are the different organizational sections for the IT shop, and then all of the numbers are just for the actual calendar year of 2002, not the whole biennium, but this is sort of a good feel for what we look like. All of the numbers are the FTE, actually, that were applied to those projects or processes for that time. And so if you look in the right-hand column and you look at this sort of gray highlighted number under customer support, translation help desk, we spent about 14.5 FTE in 2002 answering the help desk telephone and then, you know, solving customer problems and maybe running some queries for trial court people or business customers and just those sort of customer support things. And so if you look down at those highlighted numbers, those are the numbers in those different sections for the FTE we spend in that year. And that's about how we spend our time pretty accurately. We spend, next up from the bottom is application development. We spent about 16 people through 2002 on application development projects. If you drill down on those application development projects, you find out that about, you know, a lot of that stuff was sort of maintenance level application development, but nevertheless it was new stuff, whether it was maintenance or new application functionality. And then the very bottom part of that is titled infrastructure maintenance. That's just the keeping the water running through the pipes, you know, put in a new router, replace a broken router, call up somebody on the phone and contract for a new line or some sort of repair. All of that sort of behind the scenes stuff that it just takes to keep the lights on and the wheels running is So that's how we spend our time in ITD. And then the last thing, well, I've got lots of time. The last thing that you were asking for first, Chair Patridge, is the actually the last page of this handout. Yeah, you were asking, you know, who's got what and what level of technology they're at. We threw this together last night, so it's not as clear as it could be. And, in fact, in some ways, once you understand what it's saying, if you read it in portrait rather than landscape, it actually makes it's a little clearer. But what we did was, for each county, by different little icon, we indicated which year they were in terms of the newest technology. As I said, if you go back to that first list, basically everybody's up to speed on most of that stuff. We can go through and find onesie twosies, but they're mostly up to speed. So it's the new things, which is the new calendaring system, the new holder proceeding, which is data entry in the courtroom for the proceedings in the courtroom, new entry of criminal case, which is really just a part of the criminal case management system and a prerequisite to the uniform criminal judgment. And then the uniform criminal judgment are the sort of four major new pieces of technology that we're actually out there working to install in the trial courts as we go. And so as of July 103, which is a little above the middle of the page, if you look at the black squares on that line and below, you see the courts that will be really up on everything we've got by this July. And then the business analysts just sort of took a rough estimate of where they thought the rest of the courts were or would be going forward. And that, of course, changes all the time. All sorts of things change that schedule. But it's probably a pretty good guess if you take the whole picture. 05, for example, for Multnomah County to be up on uniform criminal judgment, they're starting on uniform criminal judgment right now. They've got 36 judges or however many judges they've got up there. You know, they'll be at it for a while before you get all 36 judges up there on uniform criminal judgment.
Well, I'm just a little concerned, though. My recollection was we had the uniform criminal judgment done prior to 1999, or pretty much most of the kinks worked out of it.
Representative Patridge, members of the committee, you're going to test my memory here, but I'm going to do the best I can. We certainly had a beta version of it out in two or three courts by then. We may not have been in the production version that we're in now, but we were probably close. So that's true. We've been installing it through the 9901 biennium and into this biennium. Now, having said that, that's not the only thing we've done or the only thing we've developed or the only thing we're installing. That's just sort of the flagship or leading edge of what we've been doing.
Well, I guess my concern is I know that Jackson County, when I was there, was one of the flagship courts to do the uniform criminal judgment. I know that as a DA, I know that it saved a lot of time. I guess my concern is, and maybe you can tell the committee, I know it's been done for quite a while. It's probably been done for at least, is it safe to say, 3 years, 2 years?
At least close to three.
Close to 3 years. Yet even today we have over 19 counties that aren't on it. And so can you maybe explain to the committee what the problem is with rolling these applications out faster?
I can try. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there are multiple factors here. One thing is if you look at our staffing pattern on the previous chart, you see that we were staffing up even as we were rolling this out. So even though the uniform criminal judgment was at least in beta sometime in 99 and going into production, we actually had a beta version that we had to go back and make some pretty significant changes to make it work. We were we were still hiring and staffing up business analysts to be able to go out in the trial courts and implement this in the trial courts. So that's one thing that's made it take a long time, is we were staffing up with the people to install this as we went. We're much faster now than we were in 2001 in installing this thing, or in 2000 for that matter. The other thing I'd say is each one of these different phases of the identified on this chart, you send a business analyst in a medium-sized court, and it takes 4, 5, or 6 weeks to get them up on one of these phases. And then they have to use that for a while before they can really move on to the next phase. It's really hard to move rapidly through these different phases, because these are some very big business changes and process changes for the courts. So there's a fair amount of lag time in between when you can install these phases. The other thing I'd say is that I'm losing my train of thought. Because these are such big business changes to the courts, this is not a usual model for what we develop and roll out and how fast it takes to roll it out. In other words, you have to pick and choose when you can afford to do something like this. And by that I mean, for example, we had accounting system changes for Senate Bill 70 that we implemented this biennium. Certainly the programming complexity and time was as big as any one of these modules. And the amount of change to the automated systems was as big. It didn't particularly make the trial courts more efficient, but it certainly changed a lot of what was happening in accounting. Now, it took us 8 or 10 months to develop that, but we rolled that out on a statewide basis in 6 or 8 weeks. And so it really just depends on the nature of the animal of what you're changing. We were able to drop that new stuff into accounting offices on a statewide basis. We did the training remotely by way of panel board and our email system, and dropped that in and had people standing by to answer the telephones, and all went in very smoothly and was very fast. On the other hand, the uniform criminal judgment is really a courtroom by courtroom on-site business process reengineering that can't be done in that way. You have to get all the players together, and they have to practice in advance so that they're up to speed. Because for the accounting system, I'm sitting in my accounting office, and if I'm slow or if I don't understand it and have to look up the book, I've got the time to be able to do that. You know, Carl's new system slowed me down for a couple of weeks. Yeah, I can tolerate that. But the judge sitting on the bench can't tolerate that. They just won't tolerate it, and the rest of the community won't tolerate it. The district attorney won't tolerate it, and the prosecution can't afford to wait. So you really have to go in and do a lot of advanced legwork and spend a lot of one-on-one time to get the courtroom staff up to speed. And you also have to schedule around their schedule, because their schedule is much more difficult to get into than the county clerk. So that's sort of my pitch. There really are multiple reasons why this takes so long to do. The emerging barrier, of course, is lack of resources in the trial courts. It's actually starting to become a problem to install new automation in the trial courts, because trial courts are starting to say, gee, Carl, you know, I just laid off 4 people or 6 people, and I just can't afford the extra, you know, inch on the yardstick that it takes to get this implemented. But nevertheless, that's my hand-wringing ideas for it. So that's the story. There are a variety of reasons. There are legitimate reasons. I don't think that you should look at it as reasons why this isn't going to work or isn't going to work statewide, because I don't think that's true, and I don't think that's where we are.
The other thing was just the technology itself, computers. We had to replace the green screens through the packages.
A lot of behind the scenes, you know, sort of technology infrastructure got upgraded and went along with this.
I thought we gave you the money, the ability and the staff at 99.1 to roll it out for now 4 years down the line.
I haven't been able to do a whole lot since about last September, unfortunately.
I understand that, but if it's been available for 3 years, you've had the staffing for at least 3 years to roll it out. If you take 27 courts at a one month of training time, I know you have other things going on, but you know, as Representative Butler is fond of saying, yeah, you need to get the water down the row, and you know, I feel like at least some of the commitment was that we could do that, and I understand what's gone on in the last year, but the previous 3 years before that, not quite sure about. So I appreciate the fact you gave us a plan, and we'll look at that in light of how we go forward.
Representative Patridge, let me respond one more time to that without meaning any disrespect or insults. If you think of 36 courts and 4 modules and 1 month per module and 4 people to do that task and some downtime between, and in 9901 we were phasing in staff at 50 cents on the dollar, so you had that lag time. That time adds up pretty fast. I mean, when you map all of that out, that time adds up pretty, goes by pretty fast. We are pushing this actually fairly hard, and it is well received.
Roll out a lot quicker. A lot of other companies
so
take over their core entire business systems in much quicker time than the court has been able to do this, though we don't have independently elected judges at each item. But.
So, Mr. Chair, that is, I think, at least all I prepared.
I tried to wait on the interpreter services and everything for you, but we had to go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did get 2 bills passed in another committee to honor Taiwan and to take care of some other things. So, but I did get up to my office and listen for a few minutes as I helped with some IT problems up there.
All right. Well, I'm glad you're able to solve your IT problems. Anything further? All right. Ainsley or the Chief, do you have anything else you'd like to add? In closing?
Just to thank the Chair, and that we're working on the other assignments that were provided to us, and we'll be giving those to the committee. And I don't know that I can add anything more than Judge Collins and Judge Abernathy expressed yesterday.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Molly Carson, I'm the Chief Justice. No, I have nothing to add. I want to thank you for the courtesy and your attention to this. Some of it is, to me, very interesting, and some of it less so. But we're attentive, and I appreciate that. You treated us very well and professionally, and I appreciate that. And we'll be ready to respond to any of your questions you have as you move toward your work session, and we'll be here in the audience to respond as best we can. Work session. One thing I might add to Carl's was, put it in perspective, 1977, Arnold Denneke, I'm not speaking for or against your concern, asked the court system to come up with a system of uniform forms. It was 1977. Still working on it. But we've made more progress in the last 3 or 4 years than the previous 35 years of trying to get uniform forms. You touched on one thing. The change to the uniform criminal judgment is a new world change, a sea change. It's not just going from AOL 4 to AOL 5 or something like this. This is a sea change for everybody in the business. And it was not easy for them to do it. The reason them being IT is they put some crack people out to do it. The point I want to make is we were running business as usual under the old system as we made the transition. We didn't have the opportunity, as some do, shut it down, train people, and bring them in. We are trying to keep, and the only other group I know who's done that was the legislature in 1974 that changed over to, after years of planning, over to the system you now have called OLIS, Oregon Legislative Information System. And it was a real gamble, and this legislature was able to do it, and no other state had ever made the attempt to go immediately from manual, as I recall it, in those days, manual to automated in one session, 1974. So I guess that's your perspective. I would commend the IT staff, and I would commend the staff and judges for moving forward. If somebody would have said we get away from individualized judgments 10 years ago, I said not in this state or any other state. One of the things Carl didn't say was I got a letter both from corrections and the AG. The automated system is better because they can't read our writing, judges' writing, and this has improved it. And so I'm very proud about it, of the work they've done. We're continuing to move on it, but I look at it as saying, hooray, and I realize somebody looking at it sharply may say, how come it takes so long, which is a legitimate question. I'm glad it's here because I think there were times when I doubted that we'd ever be able to pull it off. So hooray for the IT and those who have done it. And thank you for your inquiry. Thank you for your attention. And we'll be ready to try and respond to your questions.
Justice, I appreciate you being here throughout the hearings. I appreciate the work of your staff, and hopefully we haven't given you too many questions to come back to us to answer, but we'll have many opportunities to talk over the course of the next few months to resolve the issues surrounding getting the court back up and functioning again, as the chair's hope.
That's good news.
Full complement of services that we need to provide, but an efficient manner in which to provide them. So.
Thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robin.
Just housekeeping for the members of the committee. Next week's schedule is before you. We are going to start off the week with the Public Defense Services Commission, and I think Chief Justice Carson probably will be joining us for Monday and Tuesday. So don't forget him over the long weekend. We'll see him again on Monday. Wednesday we'll do the district attorneys and their deputies. Thursday we'll do the Dispute Resolution Commission. Friday, at least at this point, there is no committee scheduled. So any questions about where we're going next week in regards to what's going on? I would like, though, also as a housekeeping measure just for the members of the committee, I would ask that you pre-read any of your stuff on Department of Corrections. And I think the binders are back here already. I'd ask that you at least try and pre-read those. We've been asked by the co-chairs. They're trying to publish their budget by the 14th. The 14th or 15th is my understanding. And so they have asked us to get to them list of priorities and other items. We'll have an opportunity to discuss some of those in committee, but the Department of Corrections budgets occur after that. And since that is half of the total amount of money that this committee is dealing with almost, I would ask that the committee members take a look at those and get back to me by the end of late next week so that we can maybe either have an abbreviated hearing to ask Department of Corrections to come, maybe answer some specific questions, or we can work with Doug on doing those types of items.
Will there be any money left by the time we get to you?
Just because they're last doesn't mean that we don't get to fund them. All right. Everyone have a nice long weekend and enjoy your in-district day. I hope that those of us who have to travel far, I wish you good travels. Thanks, Robin.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Christine. And we're adjourned.
Thank you.